Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 56 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. Hey Sarah.
Hey Megan, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm excited about today's topic because we're talking about moving with kids, but also in sort of a broader sense, creating community where you are. And I think that's something that can apply regardless of how long you've lived in a place.
Definitely. We've gotten several, three or four specific requests to talk about moving to another house within the same city or to a new city or state. And our listeners know from getting to know us that we've both moved quite a bit. My family and I moved from Arizona to California almost 2 years ago. You guys have moved a lot.
Yes, many times.
I'm happy we get to address this, but also we did want to kind of broaden it in case you don't have an impending move or your roots are firmly settled. We just want to talk about kind of cultivating community for yourself and your kids and your family, no matter where you live. And that kind of, wouldn't you say that kind of ebbs and flows? You go through times where you kind of have all your people in your community and then something shakes up, whether it's schools or a new phase of life. So it's always, I think, something to be good about. And it ties in with an interview you're going to do pretty soon, right, Megan?
Yeah, with my good friend Melody Warnick, who has a new book out that's all about kind of creating that sense of settling in where you are.
Yeah, it's called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. And we're going to have her on for a special bonus interview. I think that will air in July, most likely.
So. Yeah, she's a writer friend of mine who I think also, she has a couple little kids, and her husband, who I believe is a pastor, moved around quite a bit when their kids were little. And I think she talks to a lot of people in the book about their experiences of kind of having a hometown, something that I never really have felt like I've had until now, I guess. And it's, I don't know, it's weird. It's like I wasn't raised with having that hometown feeling. And resisted it for a really long time, and I'm just kind of starting to embrace that idea. So, I can't wait for that interview, which will be, I don't know, I don't want to make any promises. It will be airing sometime in the future.
Sometime this summer.
Sometime this summer. Coming to you soonish.
But that will be kind of a great compliment to this episode.
Yes.
So we're going to talk specifically about moving with kids. We're going to answer a couple listener questions, and then we're going to talk about creating community. First, though, our very first listener question on this topic came from Amy Sloan. Amy's a longtime listener, and she called in via SpeakPipe, which is so exciting. Everybody can do that by heading to our website and calling in and asking us a question this way, which allows us to put your lovely voices on the show. So here's Amy's question.
Hi, ladies. This is Amy from North Carolina. I love your podcast. I've been listening since the beginning. And I have a question about gas stoves and ovens, which is so weird, but I've actually never had one my whole life growing up. We always had electric. My whole adult life, we've had electric. And now we're moving into a new home in a couple weeks with a gas stove and oven. And I'm completely freaking out. Everyone always says, oh, gas stoves are the best. If you like to cook, you'll love them. And I do love to cook, but I have this horrible fear that I'm going to blow up my house or leave a towel on the oven and it'll catch on fire, or we're going to die of carbon monoxide poisoning or something totally crazy. My imagination is running away with me. And I think some of it is just, I've never had it before. I don't know, like, the secrets to the gas stove and oven. Do you guys have any ideas or wisdom to share about that? I know it's kind of weird and random, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. I also have several young children, so that's another thing I'm a little bit concerned about because I do love to have them help me cook. All right, thanks. Bye.
Okay, so Amy, thank you so much for the question. I don't think it's silly at all. I will say that I have had an electric stove now for a couple of years, I guess 3 years since I've lived in this house. Previously, I had gas, and I miss my gas so much. I am a total klutz. I am the kind of person who leaves things on all the time. And I actually found that having a gas stove made that a lot less likely because you can see the flame. So you know, talking about like setting towels on fire, I've learned the hard way you can easily do that with an electric stove, with an electric range. I mean, anything that gets left on a burner and you can't always see that the burner is hot. I've set things on fire on an electric stove, and I've never done that on a gas stove actually, because you can see the flame. Same thing with kids burning their hands.
Yes, agreed.
And you can control the flame so much more. It heats up quicker, but cools down faster. Mm-hmm. I think as far as safety goes, I wouldn't worry about it. I know that's easier said than done, but, and it's very likely that the electric range you've had has actually had a gas oven connected to it, because I didn't realize this till pretty recently, but many modern stoves, ovens are gas with an electric range, because apparently gas tends to heat more evenly. Okay. Or am I getting this in reverse? Is it gas?
I don't know. I don't know about ovens. I think I'm
getting it in reverse. Whatever. Okay. Chances are good you've had a gas oven in the past and you didn't even know. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, I have to back up and say I love this question, because Amy, I don't know you personally, but you sound like you and I would get along great, because when I am moving or going into a situation where there's a lot of unknowns, I can really have a lot of specific questions about some random thing that I have no control over. So
yeah,
that would totally
I was going to say it sounds like a lot of anxiety is kind of personifying in this one thing. Yeah.
And let's throw it out there that Amy has 5 children between the ages of 5 and 11, and she's moving this summer. So all the anxiety, I can understand the anxiety, put it that way. I was going to echo a lot of what you said, Megan, is I think having a visible flame is not that there's no danger with small children and stoves. Of course there is. But I think having a visible flame is actually a lot easier to teach and be aware of safety issues with small children than having an electric stove. I've had an electric range where it was the glass top, the super flat. Yeah. And so that's even more, it's very strange. It doesn't seem like it would be something that's hot. It's the whole surface is glass. And I'm with you. I like the ability to adjust the heat. We can link to, cause she has small kids. One of those, there are kind of a plastic guard that sticks out on an angle away from little hands. And maybe Amy's kids are old enough that she wouldn't need this, but I'm thinking 2, 3, 4-year-olds who are reaching up and they don't even see the fire and they're really little. I know One Step Ahead used to have one. And so I'll look to see if they still do, or I'll find something comparable and link in the show notes. So there are simple guards. And there's also things you can put over the knobs so that kids who like to fiddle with knobs don't actually turn on the flame. Yeah. I will say I have taught my 6 and 8-year-olds how to turn on and off the range. I'm a big fan of just giving them those skills. Not that they can do it whenever they want, but I'd rather they know how to do it than sit there absentmindedly fiddling with knobs that they don't know what they what else do I have?
That was one thing I will say that did kind of give me a little bit of worry about, was not so much the fire, but like if you don't actually engage the pilot,
yes,
then it basically becomes a gas leak.
Yeah.
So I totally am on board with like show your kids how to do it right and explain to them, you know, if you turn the knob and the flame doesn't come on, then gas is getting in the house. But
right.
I feel like this is one of those things where I don't really ever hear about modern day accidents with
with
modern appliances. I just feel like a lot of those variables have been factored out with new technology So if you're clumsy though, I'm clumsy and I had no more troubles with gas than electric, fewer troubles.
Good point. Well, Amy, best of luck with your gas oven and stove. And listeners, please continue to use SpeakPipe so you can call in your own questions like that. No question too random or specific, as we've shown. And we love hearing your voices. So you can find that app at themomhour.com in our sidebar. It works on your mobile device or on your computer. And you can re-record your question if you think you sound silly. You just click delete and re-record, and it won't send to us until you're happy with it. So it's lots of fun.
And best of luck with the move, Amy. That's big.
I know.
That's big.
Good luck. Well, let's.
I did want to add. Go ahead. I want to add one more thing. And I don't know how widely available this is here. I know it's more of a European thing, but for people who are freaked out by hot ranges, there is now becoming available something called induction heating, where it's basically like a chemical reaction almost between the pan and the heating element, but it doesn't actually create heat. I don't actually know how this is possible. The heat only happens in the pan, but the burner never gets hot.
Right. Yeah, my parents had this thing in this temporary condo they were living in this summer. I never really mastered it, but
yeah. Well, worth looking into.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Amy had also a while ago sent us an email just about moving in general, and like I said, we've heard from other listeners on this topic. Do you have any thoughts on the moves you've done, the last couple moves to new houses? I think you and I have said offline before that we both secretly kind of like moving, or like the opportunity, the fresh startness of a move.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to plan a move in about a year, not out of this town, just to a different house that suits us better, as our family is changing and has changed. We've lived in this house 3 years and our family has changed dramatically because the kids' ages are all different now. And I feel like we're like a completely different family than we were. I'm looking forward to it, even though moving sucks. I mean, we all know that. I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to get really organized and get rid of stuff and start fresh. So, I feel like last time we moved, we had a whole room that we just kind of used as a triage. And we made this rule that nothing could go out of that room until, like, as we were unpacking. Nothing could leave that room until we had a place for it. So even if a box said, you know, kids' room, I sat down because I wasn't going to do it on the front end. It was too, you know, it's too harried and fast. And
I know.
You just got to get out of there at some point.
Yeah.
But you know how stuff sneaks into the boxes that doesn't really belong in that box?
Totally.
And then the last few days, you just have those random boxes or black trash bags that have like scissors and like tape and, you
paper
know,
paper towels.
A turkey baster, just like random stuff that you found at the end that didn't go anywhere else. So we just had this like we had this setup area where everything like a station where everything was set up, and every single box we opened it, we went through it and made sure the stuff was going to stay and had a home before it was allowed into the house. And that was great. I mean, we started off with like everything was just so streamlined, and it stayed that way, I guess, to some degree. But our basement and garage has gotten it's taken the brunt, you know, of stuff we've added on without culling enough. So
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's we always have these high aspirations of going through everything before you move. And realistically, I think everybody can acknowledge that toward the end, you're just chucking crap in boxes and knowing that that's okay. And that you do have an opportunity to weed out when you get to the new spot. I want to share a little hack that I did 2 summers ago when we moved out of state that I posted on our Facebook page back when we were the happiest home. And it like blew up our Facebook page with shares and comments. But that was, I bought different rolls. This is maybe a little above and beyond my normal organizational skills, but I bought different rolls of like brightly colored moving tape, packing tape. And every room that in the new house where we were going, that was the key, is we were moving from a house that had a very different setup than this house. We had kids sharing a room and here we don't. We had a loft playroom area there and here we don't. So it was kind of hard for my brain to wrap around. It wasn't a direct translation. That makes sense. Like kitchen would go to kitchen, but there were several rooms where things were not going to go to an equivalent room at the new house. So I did this color-coded packing tape, and I'd pack a box, and I'd put big, huge, like obvious neon green, for example, if it was going to the kitchen, on that box as to where it was going in the new house. And then I made like a poster board, like key code. And the movers, I thought the movers might think I was like controlling and crazy, but they loved it because movers use little tiny, have you seen those? If you've ever had professional movers, they use little tiny stickers that have their own kind of coding system on them. But they loved the big, bright, and it was so calming for my brain to look at things. And then I would even put a little piece of that tape on small pieces of furniture or like, you know, a toy or something that wasn't going to go wrapped in a box. I just put a little, you know, few inches of that tape to the underside of, you know, maybe a kid's chair or something from the playroom that was going to go in a bedroom. So when we got here, the visual cue was just so obvious. It was really easy to get stuff to the right place instead of looking, you know, when you write in a Sharpie, you've got to find where on the box you wrote it and is it on the top or I don't know. Even our kids could read the color coding. So that was a good system. That was a full house move from one state to another. So it was kind of, you know, above and beyond in some ways. If you were just doing a little easy move, wouldn't need it, but it was very helpful.
And I think that was when I finally realized how much more organized you are than me. It would never even have occurred to me to do that, but that's awesome. Yeah. I tend to be more like organized on the fly kind of person rather, you know, than have a plan ahead of time. It's more like, oh, let's just dig in and deal with this now. And sometimes a great system comes out of that, but usually it just, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah. This was one where it did serve us. So I'll post a picture of it. So you can see what I'm talking about, but it did help. Do you have any other kind of tips for people who are moving? I wrote down a couple. Go for it if you've got one in mind.
Sure. Yeah. So another thing that I think I didn't really figure out until a few moves in is that with a new house and a new layout, your book situation might change. And that was something that, you know, now I see as an opportunity again, because we have a lot of hand-me-down books in our house, and books that were appropriate for one kid's age is now appropriate for another kid's age and reading level and all that. So, but even then, like, I've lived in houses where the living area had a nice space for a bookshelf, mm-hmm. and other houses where the bookshelves had to be in bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to think about ahead of time if you can. It's like, otherwise you might just, if you're a book lover like we are, like this whole family is, you might end up with just these random boxes of books.
Yeah, and books are heavy.
Every trip up the stairs. Yeah, and so that I kind of looked at that. That's something that definitely, like, this last time, and I was much more careful about, and this time going forward, I'm going to be much more careful about it. It's just making sure, like, I take a few minutes to really be careful about which books I'm boxing together and where they're going to ultimately end up, because they may not end up in the same place. They just, like, toys. It's a good opportunity to look at through toys and say, oh, this isn't really, we don't need this anymore. This isn't for this kid anymore. This needs to go in a more communal area. This needs to be passed down, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a good opportunity. Otherwise, I kind of feel like, you know, I have to say with our moves, books and toys have been the biggest clutter creator and box creator. Everything else, I mean, toiletries, I usually just go through them and get rid of anything that's even close to being expired and kind of start fresh.
Yep.
Same thing with cleaning supplies. You'll use a lot of them during the move anyway. Yeah. So I leave kind of the ones that are like down to a few inches in the bottle. I just leave those in the old place and use those to clean up the old place.
Right.
And like, I don't even know what medications. I'm trying to think of the things that create a lot of need boxes.
Offices and papers. I mean, hopefully most of us are moving a little beyond having so many files and photo albums and like that kind of stuff. I feel like does take up a lot of space, and it can really be a source of stress if you start to go through it, because it may not be your most organized area to begin with. So then when you start going through piles of papers, it creates the same thing. Like, do I need to throw this away? Is this moving? Like, why didn't I file it properly in the first place? All of that. But I'm just trying to think of other things that can kind of stack up.
I think that you're right. I think books, toys, office supplies, and that kind of, you know, like the stuff that you put out on shelves. We're not big about stuff on shelves. We have little decor things, and you know, those things sometimes take a little longer to find a new home than they should. But I look at the other end of the move as like, I've got some time here.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to stress myself out about having everything set up in a week.
No, I was actually going to recommend the same thing, especially with kids' toys, is that if they have enough to get going, usually they're excited to be in a new space. If they have sheets on their bed and clothes in their drawers or clothes in a suitcase where they know where they are, then I don't think you need to unpack toys right away. It's almost better to kind of settle in, wait to see, like you said, where the logical play and book and living spaces are, and then take your time putting stuff out, just like Christmas or anything else. Like when they open up a box, it's kind of exciting. You don't need to pull everything out at once in the new space.
Just the house that's in the process of a move is like a big playland. There's gonna be boxes everywhere,
exactly.
Lots of open space, or the furniture will be in weird places. I mean, kids can, like, you get a lot of mileage out of just that, like a freshly moved into a house as a play space.
Yes, you can also have a lot of toddler dangers. Violet was 18 months when we did the last move, and I just remember being so paranoid. Everything, scissors, like, I feel like it was like a total, danger zone.
And you don't really know the house yet, so,
A couple of quick tips I wanted to mention. If you have little kids who are prone to anxiousness or worry, I know my kids were very confused. We forget what kids don't understand. My kids were very confused about what was coming with us and what was staying. And they would make assumptions that they were going to have to leave certain things behind that were totally coming with us, like the pillows and the sheets on their bed. Like, will I have the same well, I have my same bedspread. You know, because if you think if you go to a hotel or if you go stay at somebody's house, you have different sheets and pillows. So it did help to slow down just enough to reassure my little kids, you know, what it really meant. Our dog was coming with us, for example, but,
You
know, the refrigerator wasn't, you know, just like little mm-hmm. and things that would be in the new place for them. You know, yes, we will have, you know, whatever it is, we will have a backyard or we will have things that they can't picture and they don't know what to expect. So I think that does help if you have little kids who are prone to worry or, you know, get thrown out of sync when big changes happen. Another tip I saw was to pack a suitcase as if you're going on like a 5 to 7 day trip, even if you're just moving across town. And I think that is helpful. If you have babies and toddlers and you're doing diapers and, you know, books and small toys, it kind of just helps to pack for a week. And then you can live out of that suitcase both at the old place and the new place, but at least you have a week's worth of the small stuff, diapers, pajamas, clothes, small toys, swimsuits, or whatever it is, in one big suitcase like you're going on vacation. I don't know that I did that. Well, we did actually need to stay with my parents for a few days, so we did have that. But I think that could be really helpful, especially in certain phases of parenting when your kids are little and they just need stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to address the thing about kids and their anxieties, and this is kind of a little bit different, but along those lines. My kids have had really funny nostalgia for houses that we used to live in that mm-hmm. used to make me kind of feel bad because they'd get really bummed out and say, remember when we lived in that house? It was so great. That house was so great. And I kind of have looked back and realized, first of all, the house that we just moved out of 3 years ago was a fixer-upper, half of which never got fixed up. The upstairs was junky. I mean, we just basically kind of gave up on that house. It was like, that is not going to happen. The backyard was really small. They remember it as this awesome, like, so much better than the house we live in now, which I think it took me a while to realize it's just kind of normal. And the house we lived in 2 houses ago, there was this tree house in the backyard, and the kids keep talking about that. Remember that that house that had a tree house? Remember how great that was? Well, here's the funny thing. They would not play in the tree house. Like, I thought that was so awesome when we moved into that house, and then they would never play in it ever. I had to force them. They might have played in it one time. I think there was a spider on it, and one of them saw the spider, and then that was it. None of them would go in it ever again. And so their memory of it is so different from reality that I just think it's actually kind of funny now. But I used to get kind of bummed out, like, maybe I made my kids move away from this perfect home for them. And now I realize that's just how they remember things. Like, they are always going to latch on to things that aren't quite accurate. Right. And they were little kids. And, you know, so that's just something to keep in mind, too. That might happen as well.
That's a good point.
Your kids might miss things that weren't the way they think they were, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I think the only other tip I had was to let people help you with things. If you're a control person like me, let people help with things you wouldn't normally release from your control, like unpacking and organizing, because you can always redo it later. In other words, if you wait for you to be the only one to decide where the kitchen stuff goes in drawers, it's going to be that much more work, that much more stress. I would say be liberal with accepting help. We always say that. I mean, that's a life lesson in general. But when you're moving, just let go and let people help you, whether it's a mother-in-law or a friend or your husband, but you know, it's not his normal domain. You can always tinker later when you've got the basics unpacked. I know my mom unpacked my kitchen. Actually, she did a great job in this house, but it is kind of hard sometimes to let go of, especially in the new space. In the old space, you're like, just get it all
whatever.
In. But in the new space, we do, you know, it's our nest. And we do, if you're the one primarily at home or the one primarily responsible for home organization, it can feel like loss of control to let other people get in there. But you can always undo it later. It's better just to get rid of those boxes, get it somewhere where you can see it. So accept help. That was just my other one.
Oh, and I guess my final tip, unless you have more, my final tip would be it is okay to have takeout pizza and eat off paper towels and paper plates for the duration of the move. Just give yourself a couple of weeks. I'm being a little facetious, but really it's okay to go bare bones as far as like a meal plan and stuff goes. Because for me, I really want that first meal I cook in a new kitchen. The one thing I really love to set up that I'm really bad at setting up, ironically, is the kitchen. I love doing it, but there's always something that goes, like, I get confused by all the cupboards. I forget that certain cabinets or cupboards are even there.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that? Like, you'll move, you put everything away, and then you discover, like, one of the cabinets hasn't even been used because you forgot it existed. So I do that. I'm terrible at it. It takes me a long time of tinkering to get it right. But I want like the first meal I cook in a new house to be relaxed and fun and have everything in a place and have it feel like a thing. I don't want it to be macaroni and cheese on the stovetop when I'm surrounded by boxes. So I've just kind of basically don't use the kitchen really at all except as a staging ground until it's all put away to my liking. And in the meanwhile, it's takeout.
Right. Yep. No, I think that's
factored into the
budget. you have our permission to do takeout. All right. Well, let's kind of move on to the other part of this topic, which is really setting down roots and cultivating community for yourself and for your kids wherever you live. And just wanted to mention again, if you're just tuning in or you didn't hear us before, that Melody Warnick, who's a friend of Megan's, wrote a book called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live, and that she will be an upcoming guest on our show. And that kind of inspired us to shift to this conversation from our own experiences. And then Megan, you'll talk to her about the book and all of the research that she's done. But you and I have both moved a lot, both done bigger moves. And I think this is an important topic, even if you stay in the same town your whole life, because community is bigger than just your neighborhood or your street or your kid's school. And I think it can make or break our experience in a lot of ways, feeling like we're connected to our community. So I don't know. Do you have any like big picture thoughts to start us off?
I have a lot of thoughts. I think for me, so we've moved a lot as parents. We've lived here now going on 8 years. This will be our eighth year here because I was pregnant with Clara when we moved. Well, actually, so yeah, I was pregnant with Clara when I moved here, and she's 7 and some change. So it's been about 8 years. She is the only one of our kids who's been in the same place her whole life, which I think is just so weird. And the only other place that we lived before this for the similar amount of time was in the Lansing area. But then we moved around. So we lived like in one little town for 3 years. Then we lived in Lansing for 3 or 4 years. And it was much more transient feeling, I guess, than we do now. So we're really settling in. And I think this last time I've learned, like, take it really slow. And that's hard for me because I get someplace and I want to know people right away and I want to jump into stuff. Along the way, I've realized, and I think you probably agree with this, Sarah, I'm not much of a joiner. Like, I'm not much of a join a group kind of a person.
Yeah.
Unless there's something really compelling about it to me, but just not for the sake of doing it. And so I right off the bat, I kind of got myself involved in a few play groups and book clubs and stuff that ultimately just didn't really add a whole lot. And I kind of got myself entangled with people I didn't like that much. And it sounds terrible to say that, but it's true. Like sometimes there is sort of this like, there's sort of like the social, what's it, welcome wagon kind of crowd. Mm-hmm. And those people are easy to hook up with.
Right.
Which makes them great.
Yes.
But sometimes what ends up happening with that is that there's some drama involved with it or something. I don't know what it was. It wasn't that I individually had a beef with anybody.
Right.
It was
or just sometimes like, it's just the superficial level is great, but it may never need to go beyond that.
Right. And it wasn't that when I say I didn't like that much, it's not like I look at someone and go, ugh, I really just don't like you. It was more like I didn't like the experience of doing these group activities that I ended up doing. So it kind of felt like a waste of my time. Now, I will say that that was 5 kids in, you know, or 4 going on 5. I have a best friend, sister-in-law, who lives in town, who I could always turn to as my go-to person. So I was kind of past that early baby stage where I just needed somebody. And I think that's totally legitimate place to be too. If you just need people to talk to,
right,
people to go have coffee with or whatever, that is legitimate as well.
Yes.
But you don't have to necessarily then rush into forming, you know, getting all your time eaten up by certain activities or forming best friendships with people you just met. I think sometimes it makes a lot of sense to sit back and like kind of let it unfold, which is what I did this time. And it's worked out really well because I feel like, you know, every couple of years we'll get to a place where we're kind of ready to expand a little bit on our social circles again. Mm-hmm. And then we do. And then it feels really good the way we're doing, you know, and it's not like we're deliberately marking it on the calendar.
Right.
But, you know, as kids get older, certain friendships fall off or you just have more time on your hands and there's more. You just feel it. You feel ready to just branch out a little bit. And if you do it slowly, then you find your people.
Yes.
And, you know, and they're out there, even though you might move to a place where it feels like you're never going to find someone who's like you or that you really get along with or is interested in what you're interested in. They're out there. They're out there.
Yep.
But they're not necessarily going to be in your playgroup or whatever board you want to join or whatever, right. you know, that right. kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, 100%. I agree. I am also not a joiner, although I can get sucked into joining things later on once I know a few people. I really prefer individual connection first. It's just much more comfortable mm-hmm. for me. I don't even mind small talk. Like, I really prefer knowing a lot of different types of people individually, either at a superficial level or a deeper friendship. And then if, you know, and then if a book club forms or some kind of organizational thing makes sense, I'm fine. I'm not going to opt out forever, but it's not my style to join first and meet people within a structure. So
yeah,
but
I
think we should say that for a lot of people, that's a great strategy. And I'm so glad you said that about newer moms, because if it's really that time of life where it helps to be people in the same stage of life, then joining has really helped me at certain times in my life. So we're not anti, you know, join the PTA as a way to meet other moms or join a mom's group at all. It's possible that we're just not in that phase of life, or that it's not your or my personality, but by all means join yeah. people, because we're not anti-joining.
right. Well, I just think you have to have your expectations. You just know kind of what you're getting into it for. And I remember having conversations with new moms often when I was a new mom, and there being this palpable sense of like, where's my, you know, like, remember those deep friendships you had in junior high or high mm-hmm. school? They were kind of like a romance in a way.
Yeah.
And those sister friend people yes. that then when you have like little bit, unless you carried those people forward with you from high school or college or whatever, and they happen to have kids around the same time as you, and they happen to either live in your town or be someone you can talk to a lot, you know, in whatever way, those are all a lot of, you know, maybes, right?
Contingencies.
So if yeah. you don't, yeah, if you don't have that, it can be like so lonely to that time of life. And I find that there's like this palpable longing for those sister friendships that yeah. you can't just kind of create, because no. they take time to grow. And so I feel like that, I guess, would be my only caveat is yes, join stuff, because yeah. you just want to get out of the house.
Right.
And you want to talk to another mom and compare, you know, compare stories about sleeplessness and all those things. Absolutely. But you might not get that deep friendship out of it. And
right.
and honestly, in that point of life, you may not really have time to cultivate it anyway, oh. or the energy, you know, your kids are taking up so much of your life force.
Yeah. And actually, point. If we're talking about moving, if you happen to move in those stages of life, really young babies and toddlers, it's a great time to just get out there and join, because even if the people who grew up in that town are in new waters. So it's actually, that stage of motherhood reminds me of my college experience, because I went out of state for college. So I literally left all of my high school friends and made all new college friends. And new motherhood mm-hmm. is kind of like that in a lot of ways. Like you said, unless you're lined up perfectly with your past friendships, people are, they're forging new relationships right and left, and they're pretty open to, and, you know, looking for those kinds of connections. So if you happen to join a new physical geographical community at the same time that you're joining motherhood, I think that can actually be beneficial, because it's all new for everybody anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to go back to something you said about the way you guys have expanded your social circle over the years, because that's something I feel like Brian and I are kind of right in the middle of right now. As our kids get more independent, they have their own friends at school, and we're not doing things. We're not just doing preschool birthday parties or like mom's groups for me. It's been really nice to have, for example, couple friends that are not couple mm-hmm. friends with kids the exact same age, where it's the whole family.
Yeah.
We went out to dinner with a couple from Brian's work the other night, and you know, it was really fun. It didn't have to be brought together by the kids or the kids' school. And then I think I've mentioned even on the show that I'm really kind of itching for some professional networking and like writer friends locally, which I really had a lot in Arizona and I hadn't really like reached out to here. So, you know, I've been doing a few things to cultivate those kind of professional relationships here. So I think when your kids get out of the itty bitty stage, there's also a real opportunity to start cultivating community for yourself that's not tied to your kids. And I know you guys have done a really good job of that, because I know you have. But it's nice to hear you talk about it. And I know you have friends who don't have kids, or friends who, you know, yeah. are a totally different stage of life. And like I said, couple friends aren't something we've really had to have since before we had kids.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because families get together, and there might be a husband and a wife, but to hang out with another couple or another adults outside of kids is just not something we've really done for a long time.
So yeah, definitely we've expanded our social circle. I think that one of the things that's kind of helped us do that by doing it slowly, I feel like you find people through your people. And that's yes. always been the easiest, I think, and most successful way to make new friends. For example, you know, for a very long time, John and I basically hung out with my brother and my brother's wife, Jenna, and their kids. And then we have another friend, Melissa, who we went to high school with, who lives in town. She's a little bit busier, but she definitely was one of our main social circle type people. And then most of our other friends were from out of town. So they lived in Chicago and they don't have kids, and we'd go hang out with them in the weekends and stuff like that. Right. But we didn't have like a huge bustling group here in town, and we still don't, frankly. But so like last year, my brother sold his house and hit it off with his realtor. And then we ended up hitting it off with his realtor and his wife. And now they're good friends of ours too. And then we've made friends through them. So it's kind of like someone you like, you're also likely to like the people that they like. If these are your people, then their people are probably your people. And I found that with theater too. So getting kind of into doing more acting and stuff, like theater is a eclectic and strange group of people. And there are definitely folks I gravitate to more than others. Like there's people who are great to do shows with, but they're just a little avant-garde for me or something. I don't know. It's just, you know, we just don't match up as far as like how we're going to hang out and how we're going to spend our time goes. Right. I might like them a lot, but it's just like, how is this going to be a fit, right?
Right.
But there are definitely always those people who are a fit. They're everywhere. There's going to be that person you really hit it off with. And then those people's people become your people.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so good about slowing down and not always defaulting to my kid likes this kid, therefore, ergo, I have to be friends with this kid's parents, because it doesn't always work out that way. And there's a group of moms that who some of their kids are friends with some of my kids that I've resisted joining the group, not because I don't think they're individually lovely people, but I just don't really do kind of the big group thing. It's just, you know, unless I sort of curate it myself, I'm not comfortable sort of coming into a group that already exists. I find that often there are sort of a lot of, I don't know, it has that clicky feeling. Sometimes there's like the social director person who has to know everybody. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
We all know I'm dancing around this, but we all know exactly what I'm talking about here. So I kind of resist that and have often just kind of skirted the edges and then tried to find the people that I like. And then I become friends with those people individually. I don't have to be in on the group. Like, and I don't have to feel bad about the fact that I don't get invited to the group stuff either.
Right.
That's another important thing. Yes. Like, I can just like the person I like that I really hit it off with and just spend time with that person. And we've had success doing that with a couple of like bigger groups that have been around forever. And I really don't have much interest in hanging out with the whole crew all the time.
Right.
Not to say I wouldn't sometimes, but I operate more individually in small groups. But I can be friends with just one person, or we can be friends with just one couple. And if I don't get invited to like all their parties and stuff, that's okay. It's not a slight against me. It's just that all these circles overlap at different points. It's like the Venn diagram of friendship, right? And it's not always, there's not always going to be a complete overlap, and the circles are not always going to just fit neatly over one another. That's, which is like why I kind of like diversifying and not just having that one group that you're always with.
No, I think that's
hopefully that came out right, because I feel like it sounded super judgy, and I don't mean it that way at all.
No, I don't think it came out that way at all. And I want, on that note, I want to give a shout out to Technology Man, because I am much more comfortable nurturing some of these types of community building and relationships via text and Facebook. And I don't think I'm hiding behind a screen, but with as crazy as I have kids in two different schools, we're relatively new to the area. I'm like you. I don't really like the big group thing. So it's really nice for me to exchange numbers with somebody real quickly and then just shoot them a follow-up text later. Like, hey, I really like talking to you. Like, let me know the next time you guys are going to this park. Or because I feel like there's little ways you can nurture, you can use technology, whether it's social media or texting or email, to kind of like deepen and nurture those newer relationships so that when you are in a big group, you have that, you know, you have built that in the in-between. Because the idea of like mommy coffee dates, I don't even know anyone who really does that, who like meets up for coffee while their babies play in the background. That's a great opportunity to get to know somebody, but it doesn't always happen that way. And big groups can be hard. So I just want to throw a shout out to technology in general as a way to, sometimes it gets a bad rap for like robbing us of interpersonal communication, but I actually think in a lot of ways it can support these types of connections.
So. I totally agree. And can I add something to this? This might sound a little cheesy and very Brené Brown of me, but not that Brené Brown is cheesy. She's quite the opposite. I always feel like when I try to talk about this stuff, I sound cheesy.
Yeah, whatever. I know.
But I think sometimes like putting yourself out there and letting yourself be a little vulnerable in that moment can be really helpful. So like the mom I was just talking about, actually, that was kind of part of this bigger group that I then sort of became sort of a spinoff friend, I guess.
A sidecar friend.
I think, you know, she and I kind of texted with each other a little bit, and she would just send me like little funny emojis and crap. I don't know. I can't remember what it was. She was at a baseball, like clean up the baseball field day, and she was texting me about how much it stunk. I didn't have to go for some reason, and she was really jealous that I didn't have to be there. And I wrote something like, I like you. Like, I think we're going to hit it off, you know? And sometimes it's like, just say that, you know? Yeah. If you feel like you feel a connection with somebody, or like you're going to be friends with that person, someone kind of has to be the first one to say, hey, like, I'm not just texting you because our kids are friends, or this isn't just me being like, this isn't me just saying we should get together because that's right. a socially polite thing to say. Because right. I will never do that. I will right. never say to someone we should get together unless right. I mean it. But they don't know that, you know? Right. So, yeah. So just saying like, oh, I like you, or you, that's funny, or, you know, just, yeah. I think sometimes that little extra edge, and maybe the other person's thinking it too. And they're like, oh God, I'm glad you said that because I really like you too. And let's actually make this happen. Otherwise it's so easy to get buried in all these socially like, yeah. required invitations and
yep.
texting that has to go on that sometimes just doesn't need to go beyond politeness. And
right, exactly.
So if you kind of push it a little bit, I think it can lead to good stuff.
And I would add to that, don't feel guilty if there are some people that you just, like Clara said, I just don't enjoy her. Remember when we talked about the playground politics?
Yes.
If there's just some people that you just don't enjoy, that's okay.
Yeah,
you didn't like fail at, you know, developing relationships in your community. It's just move on to the next one.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about like, we were talking about community, but I want to talk a little bit about like your town and your school and your neighborhood and some of the actual geographical components. And I wanted to share that I, for a long time, have felt kind of small town envy or like Main Street USA envy, because I have lived all of my life of having kids in very sprawling suburban strip mall-y places where most people are from elsewhere. They have moved from other places. Arizona is very much that way. I would say where we are in Orange County is a mix. There are people who are born and raised here, but even then they might be born and raised an hour away or something. Right. And so I've always kind of felt like I love the idea of shopping local and having your local downtown, and had a little bit of like idealism around that. And what I find, I realized, especially moving here, and we're in a small suburb in a sprawl of many suburbs, is that you can be local and think local and appreciate local stuff wherever you are. If you are living, in a town, a suburb, a city, or a rural area, but there's something that makes that uniquely local. And, mm-hmm. and so I've just tried to like change my mind a little bit about that. Yeah. And again, as my kids are getting older, we're going to the local library more. We go to the same, you know, the grocery store and it might be a chain grocery store, but it's the same people who work there every week and they are part of our community. So I think for me, that was just a mindset shift. I was a little down on suburbia. I was down on strip mall, you know, like chain stores, and kind of wished for this more idyllic situation. And really I just needed to change my mind because you have localness wherever you are.
Yeah. And community is what you make of it. And so is your hometown. I totally agree. And I will also say, as much as I do love sort of this little small town environment that I'm in, it has its downsides. You know, this is a town of 10,000 people, and many of them have lived here their entire lives.
Yeah.
And many of them come from prominent families who've been here for generations. And I'm not going to say it's not overt like you hear about like southern small towns where if you're not, right. you know, if you haven't been there forever that you don't fit in and no one likes you, like, and it's not just a southern thing, but it's kind of that stereotypical.
Yes.
You know, I it's not like that. It's not in your face. No one ever says to me, oh, so you didn't come from St. Joe. It's not like that. There's enough transplants here. There's enough newer people here that would be kind of silly, I think. But there is sort of this sense that there is a group of people who all went to the same schools and all know each other.
Yeah.
And I don't have that anywhere. You know, I don't have, I was saying earlier to you, Sarah, I think before we started recording, like I've really have never had a hometown. It's funny, I spent 3 summers here as a kid because my dad was actually remarried for a little while and he and his wife lived in this town about a block from where I currently live, our current home. And so I spent 3 summers here and I found out that one of our good, the newer friends that I was mentioning that's a realtor, and I may have played on the same baseball team as a kid. So we figured that out. And actually that made me so excited. Like, oh my gosh, I have this connection with this place and I don't really have that with a lot of places. So I think that's kind of a fun feeling for me. But at the same time, I think it can get a little old for people who are living in truly small towns or who maybe are from those small towns and you can't walk 5 feet without running into someone you knew.
Yeah.
And I'm like about a half an hour from the place I went to high school. Definitely has that very home. I only lived there for 3 years, but that's probably the closest thing I would say that I have to a hometown.
Right.
And, you know, I see on Facebook, there's a huge contingent of people that I went to school with who still live there, and many of them married other people, you know, from different grades or whatever. But there's just like this huge community there. And in some ways it's awesome and I see how close knit it is. And then in some ways I'm like, oh man, that just feels like those people knew me in some of my worst moments. And I don't know, I'm kind of glad also to have a little distance from it. So I think, but if I lived there, I would totally find a way to embrace it. So, you know what I mean? Like you can see the positives and the negatives to wherever you are.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the suburban neighborhoods have, it can be very family focused. They have great amenities often that we really don't have, I will say. Often like the housing situation, the way the developments are set up are just like a lot more family friendly. So there's something to be envied about basically anything.
Yeah. And that's where we are now. It's very planned community. Our town was not even incorporated until the early 90s. It was part of sprawl. But it wasn't. And so since it was incorporated relatively recently, they did a really good job. Like what they call the town center is really like, it's all chain restaurants. And, you know, it's nothing like what I think a historic downtown in the Midwest, like those, you know, Chicago suburbs that I've been to looks like. But they did a good job planning it. It has a fountain. It has a grassy area where families can picnic. They do 4th of July fireworks there. So, yeah, so I agree. There's pros and cons to every situation. How about, do you have anything to say about how your kids have connected now that you've been there 8 years? Is there anything you can think of to help people kind of give their kids roots in a community or help kids kind of feel connected to where they live?
Yeah, you know, I think that something we've done, maybe just by accident, pretty well, is really let the kids from pretty young age. And that's, again, something that's a lot easier to do in a small town where it's relatively, where I feel relatively safe about them kind of tooling around and where all the kids in the neighborhood school live in the same general area.
Yes.
I will also say that makes it a lot easier. But I've let the kids more or less manage their social lives. And by that, I mean, like from the age of 7, they were choosing who they're friends with and they don't play with kids they don't, you know, enjoy, as Clara said. And they often will, and you can almost like almost see them even do the compromise between like the kid they'd really like to hang out with, but who lives far enough away that moms have to arrange the rides and all that, and the neighborhood friends who are good to play with today. And I think that's kind of like, that translates so well to adulthood too, right? You know, we've got our friends who are like the people, if we could choose who we want to spend the time with right now, and time and distance and geography and all that was no factor, then we might choose different people than we would choose if we just want to go out to dinner. But but everyone has a place and it's all valuable relationships. So I think, I've seen them kind of navigate in their heads, like, is it worth it to just, you know, bike around the corner and go see if so-and-so is home, and, you know, because I'm maybe going to hold out. And that's the other thing. Like, I've tried to teach them the politeness.
Yeah.
You can't make plans with one kid and then you're holding out for someone else. That's not fair and that's not kind. But at the same time, like, they have to kind of learn how to navigate that too, you know? So I don't know. I think they've had a lot of the same friends. My older kids, like Jacob just graduated last weekend, and it was really fun seeing him sitting in the stands or in the chairs with some of these kids who I don't even recognize anymore. And then they got up, you know, they said their names and they got up to get their diplomas. I was like, what? That's little Levi or that's little whoever. And he might not hang out with those kids at the same way or the same amount, but they're still, those bonds are still pretty tight and they're still obviously friends. And I would say the same for the other kids. Like, they have tight friendships that they've made. And They're particular about who they'll hang out with. And I don't know if that's maybe because they have so many siblings that they can be.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not really worth it to them to leave the house if the company they're going to hang out with isn't better than what they already have.
Right.
So, and I think that that's another benefit of having more kids in the house, but they're particular and they've taken their time to develop friendships and they've really connected with, they've really created some really strong lasting friendships. And I've really enjoyed watching that kind of play out.
That's so good.
Could be totally different with Clara. She also has cousins, though, you know, and then she's got the cousins' friends. And then that kind of expands her group without her having to work very hard at it. So she could have a very different experience. I don't know, but with the boys for sure.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we're still so kind of new to this area, but one thing I feel like that's helped us as a family is to get outside our little suburb and explore the area. So if you're new, we've been talking a lot about social relationships, but if you're new to an area and just want to kind of start to feel like it's home, like it's rooted, I know it was very unnerving to me to not know my way around this like very big populated county and people. And there are a lot of people who are from here and just, they talk about the freeways and the roads. And I just felt like I didn't know anything. And I just feel more and more rooted when we take little side trips. I mean, I'm talking 30 minutes, not even like a weekend or anything. But we've tried to be pretty intentional about that when we can as a family. And I think it helps the kids too, to see like, this is where we live. Cause I mean, Target looks the same everywhere, school and a classroom and, you know, but for them to start to feel like this is where we live and it is because we moved out of state, it's very different and start to feel like, oh, we're going to go up to Huntington Beach or we're going to go down to San Diego or we're going to go and know as adults, we know where these places are. I don't know. So that's kind of helped, I feel like, create a sense of place for us.
Both, and I think that's really important too.
Staying local and cultivating those local patterns, our local library and our local, you know, where we run our errands and where we like to go to eat. But also then the next kind of ripple in that pond would be the larger regional area. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we were very good about that in Arizona, to be honest. Partly because people have to get out of Arizona when it's hot and partly because of the ages. We were just having babies. So it's just, I think we did Flagstaff once to go to the snow, but we just really were not very good about. And so I think it's more of a phase of life thing. It's not Arizona's fault. We've tried to really create that sense of place regionally here. And it's helped me feel more like this is my home. You know, I know which way's north.
And it's also that it's not that you weren't good at it necessarily or good about it. I mean, it was a different phase of life. It was like the difference between being like in the weeds, getting by, just doing the essentials, which maybe the essentials are I keep my kids alive.
Yeah.
I buy groceries.
Yeah.
I do the laundry. I try to see people in my town.
Yeah.
And that's about as much as I can manage. And then as they get bigger, you can branch out like that. Like I love the thing about the sense of place. We lived here for years before, and we lived in like this area that's just dotted of little small charming towns all along Lake Michigan, and they all have their own little flavor and there's lots to do in this general area, but we did not branch out until in the last few years because we just was busy. We had every time we went someplace we had to take all of the kids. I mean, it was just a little bit overwhelming, and so to me that's totally like a phase of life thing that now it's no big deal to throw everyone in the car and go to a different beach than we usually go to, or go to a different town and just have ice cream or whatever, just to see it. It's not a big deal, but man, it was a big deal for a while. So,
well, and that's such good advice for people that are listening who aren't moving, but who are kind of stuck. I mean, I think you said at the start of this conversation that you go through phases where you start to try to branch out. And so moving can provide an opportunity to do that. That's what happened to us. We moved right at the stage where our kids were getting easier and yada, yada. But if you're not moving, it's still a great time to kind of shake things up every once in a while. And I think day trips and, you know, changing up where you go and who you hang out with is a great way to do that. So,
agreed.
Well, I think we were going to wrap up if we have time with our regular segment about what's going on in our lives. Do we have time for that?
Sure. Yeah. Go for
it. Awesome. Well, I kind of wanted to do something different and talk about, I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts lately, both for kind of research and to stay on top of what's out there, but also just for my own enjoyment. So I wanted to kind of shout out to a handful of podcasts just in case they'd be interesting to others. The first one is called the Coffee and Crumbs podcast. And Coffee and Crumbs is a pretty popular blog, collaborative blog for moms, very much, I think, geared toward moms of babies and toddlers, which is why it might have just missed my radar, but they are a very popular website. They have great essays and beautiful writing about motherhood, and then they started the podcast. But I think they're doing a great job and they're relatively new. So I know we have a lot of listeners who have babies and very young toddlers, very young kids. So their topics are all very pertinent to that stage of life. They're doing a great job with the podcast and they're easy to find. It's just, they're just search for Coffee and Crumbs podcast. And you guys are probably familiar already with their website. Another one, Megan, I don't know if this is on your radar, is hashtag AmWriting with KJ Dell'Antonia of the New York Times Well Family blog and Jessica Leahy, who's an author and writes about education.
I know them both and I'm very familiar with the hashtag, but I did not know it was a podcast.
It's new. It's relatively new.
Okay.
So I want to say they launched it right around the time we were at Mom 2.0, the conference, or right after that. So they're only maybe 6 or 8 episodes in. And it had been, I'd been wanting to listen and keep forgetting, you know how that happens. Like, but I did, and it's going to be really fun to listen to. So if you're a writer, the hashtag AmWriting, which is an actual hashtag that's really good to follow on Twitter if you're a writer. Yeah. But they are really fun and funny. I don't know them personally. I just know of them. But they are fun and funny, and they talk a lot about getting stuff done and procrastination and all the things that writers deal with. And then on a totally different note, I am rather obsessed with politics this year. I won't go into detail, except that it's sort of a spectator sport. For Brian has always been this way about politics. He's really knowledgeable and he gets into kind of like the stats aspect and kind of the behind the
John
scenes.
John does too. Like he knows all the delegates and all the numbers. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, exactly. So it's much more about like almost the political science than it is political ideology. But the NPR Politics podcast is fantastic. If you're someone who gets really frustrated with just clickbaity headlines and really partisan stuff, the NPR Politics podcast is a roundtable, and they do one every Thursday that just recaps the week. And it's the only political thing that doesn't either make me mad or make me bored. So, nice. I mean, you could argue that NPR has some leanings one way or the other, but I don't find it particularly biased. So that may be my own bias. But I think it's definitely worth a try if you're feeling like you want to be more informed, but you can't stand another terrible like Facebook share headline. And then really quick, for Game of Thrones fans, I had to ask Brian about this one because I don't watch Game of Thrones, but there's a whole bunch now of like TV show podcasts that like recap the show.
Yeah.
I know I was listening to one about Downton Abbey when that was on, that was really good. But, Brian recommends one and it's just called the Game of Thrones podcast, but it's from baldmove.com is the people who do it. And he listened to several before he settled on that one. So just in case we have,
I'm sure we have some fans in the audience.
So that's a good one. And I will link to all of those in the show notes.
All right. Well, I was going to talk about something a little bit, I don't know. It feels a little vain of me, but I guess it's not. Well, I think I mentioned on here a couple of months ago that I started working with a trainer and I wanted to come back and give an update because I had my doubts about, you know, I've said I'm not really a joiner. I've never been one of those people who accountability partners really do much for me as far as working out goes, because I don't really love working out that much. But I will say I have stuck now with the trainer. I've seen her twice a week, every week without fail, except for 1 week she was on vacation, and then I'm going to be gone on vacation, so I'll have to figure something out. But now for, I want to say, 9 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I'm pretty proud of myself. She works me hard, but I gave her some parameters going in of things I didn't really want to do and what I really did, like the goals I really wanted to reach and kind of what I was there for. And she kind of made me this program. And, you know, I pay her, and if I don't show up, I lose my money. And she doesn't really do anything. She's very chill. She just stands next to me and watches me.
Yeah.
And she hands me stuff, which is actually really helpful. Like, you know, now I've done the weight room now a bunch of times, like, you know, now 9 weeks times twice a week. So like I've been in there, you know, like 16 to 18 times. And she gets me set up on a machine and then hands me the thing and says, do this. And just having that support has made a huge difference.
It's
so
cute.
Yeah, so I'm getting stronger for sure.
Yeah, do you feel like progress in terms of your whatever your goals were, energy or fitness? Or
I feel like I'm definitely getting stronger. I feel like I probably need to add some cardio in. I sort of let that go during the play and stuff because I was just so busy. You know, I'm not losing weight, which I was not really the goal anyway. And also, I think maybe I've gained a little weight from muscle. Mm-hmm. But I definitely feel like things are shifting. Like I can tell a difference in my shoulders. There's muscles in my arms I never was really working. And it's always funny when she'll set me up with an exercise and I'm like, oh, what's that? I didn't know I had a muscle there. So she's really good about giving me a variety of stuff that keeps me interested. And then usually, like, there's one exercise that she has me do two circuits. So it's like three exercises upper body, three exercises lower body. Usually you start with lower body. And then you do three sets of 12 reps. Mm-hmm. So you do three exercises, three sets, 12 mm-hmm. reps. And there's usually one that's terrible that I hate. But then it kind of balances out. Like, the rest of it's not so bad. So, like, if I can just get through the one I really, really hate, then I'm good on the other end. So I definitely think I'm making progress. I can't tell a huge difference right now, but, like, the way I look. But it's probably so gradual. I don't know that I'll notice right away anyway. So, yeah.
Well, and the consistency is key, because that's so hard to do on your own.
It is very, very hard.
It's very hard to push yourself on your own.
I would never. I would poop out after like seven reps. Every single exercise she gives me, there's no way I would do 12 if it was just me.
Right.
I just know myself. I wouldn't do it. So it's totally been worth the money. It's been worth the time. You know, the investment of time. It's not a huge amount of time. I only see her for half an hour at a time. So
yeah,
if you've been kind of like trying to get back in the gym or just can't get yourself to stick with something and you have it in your budget, it's worth thinking about. You know, you can also do group training if you don't want to pay for someone by yourself. You could, you know, do like with two or three other people as well. So.
And I love that you just told her exactly kind of why you were there and what you want out of it. Don't we get better at that as we get older?
I was so clear. I was like, look, I'm 38 years old. I am too old to do burpees. I don't want to – not that I couldn't do a burpee. Obviously, I could. But the point is I'm too old to, like, torture myself.
Right.
With and stuff I absolutely hate doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, nope. Not doing burpees. Right. It's just, like, I gave her a whole bunch of these things I just was not interested in doing. Now, to be honest, I also did say, like, I didn't really love doing body weight exercises, and she throws them in there anyway because they're effective. But she doesn't overload. Like, she knows I'd rather lift a weight.
Yeah.
So she doesn't overload me with that stuff.
Yeah.
So,
That's great.
So.
Awesome.
Well, I guess we should wrap up, eh?
We should wrap up. I want to remind everybody to check out themomhour.com and everything we talked about today, because there was quite a bit we will link to in the show notes. While you're there, call in a question like Amy did. You can do it right on our website. The app is called SpeakPipe, and it says leave us a voice message or something like that. It's really easy. And then, yeah, leave us a comment. Let us know what you thought of this episode and how you are cultivating community where you are. And also look for Megan's interview with Melody Warnick in a couple of weeks, most likely.
Yes.
All right. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye, guys.